You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hey, how's it going?
And me, Brian. Niall had other things on that he'd forgotten about.
Oh, life gets in the way.
And if I let this go on too long, I would definitely have forgotten everything which happened in these cartoons we watched. I'm struggling to remember them now.
I'm hoping I watched all the right episodes.
That is the other problem, yeah, is.
Mm.
Okay, anyway, first up, this one definitely watched and definitely is stuck in my mind, and that is Dragon Ball Super Episode 77. Let's do it, Zeno-sama. The All-Universe Martial Arts Tournament, in which Goku establishes himself an early contender of Villain of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not difficult, but everyone looks good in comparison to Goku, including Vegeta, known asshole, and the God of Destruction look like sensible motherfuckers in comparison. Dear.
So, you don't really know by the episode, but you know by the preview for the next episode that basically Goku has doomed 11 universes to their deaths.
Yeah, I mean, like, assuming it's not just loser gets destroyed. Like, just one of them. But yeah, it seems to be only, like, one universe is going to survive.
And even before he gets to there, he's pretty much made himself look like a complete dick due to his complete disinterest in Bulma's pregnancy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at the start of it, he's bringing his produce to the farmer's market, and it seems like, oh, he's being a responsible adult for once. Then he says, well, that's enough of that shit. And just manages to be an asshole for the rest of the episode. Also, Bulma's your oldest friend, dude. You didn't know she was, like, she must be at least, like, 8 months pregnant at that stage, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
So he just does not know how to behave. He tries to drag Krillin away from fighting crime.
Yeah, he's literally punching crime.
He gets wounded by a thug this episode.
Yeah, he takes a... He manages to, like, make them look kind of stupid in a lot of ways, but he does... I guess he gets shot with a bullet, but it just sort of bounces off him anyway.
Yeah, but it's because he's distracted and he can't focus his key. And basically, that's what sets all this off, is that he's coming back from the farmer's market. Some guys try and hijack his van, because he's got a nice new van from the Capsule Corporation.
It's just a hover van. It's not...
Yes.
I mean, like, that's cool, but it's still a van.
And he's like, there's no more strong people left in this universe for me to fight, therefore why I'm rusty.
Yeah, I'm not getting to fight any incredible danger. It's almost like the universe is great and we don't have to fight to live anymore. What a crappy place this
so,
is.
So, yeah, he gets on the blower to Whis. He says, yeah, you can come as long as you bring some sweets. He wants to take Goten with him, and of course Chi-Chi's like, no, you're not taking Goten with you.
I mean, like, she does give out to them to the point where they can sneak away in the middle of her
speech,
Yeah, but she does let him off in the end. She doesn't let the kid off because, you know, he presumably has school or responsibilities, unlike his father. So he figures, oh, I'll go down to Vegeta's. He'll fucking want to go on this thing as well. It's like, oh, Bulma's really fat. That's weird.
Well, first of all, he goes and gets the sweets.
That's right. Yeah, and even freaking Goten has to inform him on what's a nice way to formally present sweets.
I know.
Jeez Louise.
I liked that this episode, it kind of made it seem that Goten is picking something up from his mum as well in a different way to how Gohan had picked something up from
other
people. That he's not just a clone of his father, which...
No, he appears to know how to be polite.
Yes. Yeah, so he's like, oh, wow, you got fat, Bulma. I'm pregnant, you idiot. So, like, how did that happen? Like, oh, God.
Yeah, and then, like, saying to Vegeta, it's like, hey, do you want to fuck off and train for a bit? He's like, my child is going to be born. It's like, well, you're not having the kid.
Yeah. And, of course, that plays up later when Whis behaves exactly the same way.
Yeah, but Whis doesn't understand how this biology works. He's an angel. I think that's a fair enough excuse.
So Goten agrees to stay behind and train with Trunks. Because Chi-Chi catches up to them and says, yeah, you can go, but you can't take Goten.
Yeah, Vegeta's staying behind because he's being a sensible father. I mean, like, he's essentially jobless. All he does is train in that high gravity room.
Yes.
But he is sticking around while his wife is pregnant, which, you know, bare minimum, Goku, you ass. What was his line again? It's something like, well, I was dead when Goten was
born. Yeah.
Fucking easy excuse, huh? Oh, dear.
So they go off to, he goes off to see Beerus and Whis, gives them the sweets, and he's like, well, I think we should go check in on Zeno and see if he wants to start that martial arts tournament. And Beerus is like, no, he's forgotten, don't remind him.
Yeah, don't remind the boss and we won't get in trouble. Dear. Like, and he's obviously, yeah, terrified of him. And
there is one line in here about, I think he just threw like a line out to Goku's, like, about Goku wanting to be a god of destruction. Because I wonder if that's like the final end game of this is, of Beerus is like, well, if I train Goku up to be a god of destruction,
I won't have to do anything?
I won't have to do anything, yeah. I'll be able to knock it off.
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe that's how he got the role, you know?
Yeah.
And then he just wanted to be lazy. Because there's not really much in destroying things.
Yeah, because we've seen in the opening credits a bunch of other gods of destruction. And
there's apart, a creepy clown one.
Yeah, apart from the Egyptian motif, there's not necessarily a unifying design.
Yeah. Yeah, and that seems to be the same throughout the things anyway, that all the angelic guys have a kind of a look to them. All the Kai seem to have a similar kind of look.
Yeah.
In clothing, not in actual...
Yes, in not yeah. actual appearances, yeah.
Mm.
And they say, oh, I've got this button here. If I press it this way, I summon him. If I press it this way, I go. And then he tricks them.
Yeah, he pretends to throw it in the air like you would pretend to throw a ball for a dog, but not actually throw it. And they fall for it.
Yeah, so he goes off. The Zenos are playing a game which they're finding boring.
Are they actually destroying planets? I assume
think
that's
so,
what
yes,
they're doing.
Yeah.
And then when all those planets spill on the floor, like all those planets are destroyed now.
And there's a neat bit when the present day Zeno raises his arm and the future one raises his arm at the same time and then realizes he's raised a different arm. So then he puts that down and puts it back up, the other arm up.
Yeah, he's mirroring his thing rather than raising up the same right arm or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're all like, yeah, oh, thank you for reminding us, Goku.
Yeah, so they said, it's like, well, we'll be back to you when we set the date for it.
Yes.
Which they are immediately back with it, with a time frame that we don't understand, obviously.
No.
Presumably it's like next week is actually the time frame.
Yeah, because it's like a list of, is it days or months? It's like sort of year. No, I think it's years, isn't it?
I think it's years, and I feel like it goes into the
dot.
Billions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's based on Zeno's own. Yeah, because Beerus is like kind of explaining, yes, Zeno's an innocent, but that's the problem. He's an innocent. He doesn't realise the consequences of some of his actions.
Yeah, yeah. As in, he'd be just like, yeah, I'll destroy a universe. And it's like, but like, he probably, okay. You can't explain it to him.
Yeah. So that's all set up for next week. We've got a new opening as well, where we see loads of new characters who we're going to meet.
Yep, loads of new fun characters to kill off.
The main one we seem to see is like a grey version of Captain Picard, but
see,
really
okay,
muscly.
What version of Star Trek are you watching? Because I don't recall Picard being like purple and super ripped.
I know, but the uniform, the uniform's very close to Captain Picard's uniform.
There might be a play on it, yeah, with I forgot what they call that symbol for the logo for those shirts.
Yeah,
but no, yeah,
it's,
yeah,
it's the red. It's the red uniform with the black shoulder neck situation, which is definitely what Captain Picard. And he's got black trousers as well, like Captain Picard. He's Captain Picard, man. I tell you.
If he comes in and his name is Picardo or something, I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah, yes, we got this. Yeah, we got a clown god of destruction, an Egyptian woman, a fox, a sort of swamp man that looks like somebody who's from the metal race, or another robot type one, an elephant guy, a mouse.
I was just thinking, like, the guys from Universe 6 must be shitting themselves because they lost the last tournament.
I know, but there's 10 people in these teams, so they will have had to find some more people to join the team.
True. I mean, like Frieza. Sorry, I was going to say good Frieza, but double bad Frieza
yes.
is gone. Yeah, so they're already like a man down.
There looks like a bunch of angels and a bunch of Kai. There's some furries.
Obviously.
There's some women who we've not seen before. There's other guys in similar uniforms to the grey Picard.
Oh, actually, what's the 10-man team from Universe 7?
That is...
Because we see the lineup later.
Yes, again. So it is... Let's go through. Goku.
Yeah.
Gohan.
Yeah.
Piccolo.
Back in the game. Piccolo.
Boo.
Hopefully there's no written portion.
Vegeta. Krillin.
Yeah.
Tenshin.
Yeah, I think it's 18 and 17.
18 and 17 and Roshi. That's E10.
Roshi, yes. I always forget that he's there as well. That sounds amazing. Because he's just going to have to pull out all the crazy shit.
We don't see 17 in the episode, but he's in the opening credits, isn't he?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Being brooding on a cliff and shit.
Well, yeah, because he's got a family living in the woods, isn't he? That's what happened to him at the end.
Is it?
Yes.
I was thinking, I thought he was dead. Not that it makes a difference.
No. He's got a wife and adopted children. He lives in the forest and battles poachers.
Okay.
And I think next episode, future Zeno wants to see a fight. So is it Goku and Beerus going to have a fight, I think?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shit, I forgot what the preview was now.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Mm. Anyway, this was a really good episode. As much as horrible as Goku is, it was all within character as well. It's it wasn't diverting from what we've established throughout Dragon Ball.
No, he hasn't done a heel turn. He's just as stupid as he ever was.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as battle mad as well. It's he's not going to be happy until he's beaten up everybody in all the other 12 universes.
And technically killed them.
Yes. And and then what? What does he do? Commit suicide? Well, in the old continuity, he disappeared for 5 years before he shows up in the future bit. Now, that can't happen now because there's only 4 years to go before that bit happens. But I wonder if this is the final arc and then... we get him going away, and then we get the previous bit where he shows up and takes Ubers his apprentice.
Hmm.
Yeah, so maybe he goes off to become the new God of Destruction at the end of this. Because, it has to end with him beating Beerus, because that's how it started.
Yeah, that's true. That seems to be a fairly circular way to do it.
Hmm. Yeah.
So the good guy becomes the God of Destruction. That's
yeah, possibly. This sort of arc would set him up to being that.
Yeah, pretty much. Way to go, asshole. You destroyed all the other universes.
But I wonder if everybody from those other universes will end up living in Universe 7.
Yeah, but I'm sure they have family, cousins, friends in the other universes.
Well, this is a thing where wishes happen on a fairly regular basis.
That's true.
And we've established there's a way of doing ridiculous wishes now.
Yeah, the double crazy cool wish. It's I wish for all fucking universes to be back. And Dragon's like, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
The stakes are kind of low, but it's still a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not going to give you a super depressing ending. At all.
I don't know, dude. I seen the end of the Future Trunks thing.
Well, that's true, yes.
Oh, dear.
Well, technically all these people are still alive.
Well, not the same people.
Not the same people, but they are essentially the same people. They're just an earlier version of them, which didn't have to go through such hell.
Hmm. Oh, dear.
And some of them, there's now doubles. They've got spares. They've got a spare May and a spare Future Trunks.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm surprised they didn't somehow get Future Trunks as a member of the team, to be honest. But
what would all the shenanigans they pull, yeah.
But maybe they've had enough Future Trunks fan service for people.
Yeah, and then they seemed to, they kept saying, let's not tell the boss about this.
Yes.
who's this guy? Don't worry about him. Yeah.
Right, on to things which... there is another show which we'll get to, which involves a main character being an utter dick, but we'll get to that later. Hmm. First up, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master, Episode 18, Kyo is Calling Me. in which I think it really was just kind of a series of gags until we got to the plot of the next bit where they want to... It's basically leading into them going and recruiting Hanbi.
I think they probably just made it gag-heavy because the last ones have been very history-heavy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, what is it? Oh, there's... it was like, oh, he's very subservient. The monkey is subservient to...
The other two.
Yeah, Hideyoshi
generals.
Is still behaving like he used to behave to Yoshimoto and Toshi. And they go, no, you're on the same level as us. And then he immediately goes, okay, what's up, Yoshi and Toshi?
Yeah, he gives them nicknames which they're not too fond of. your man still gets on very well with his wife.
I guess
yes. Toshi, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Toshi. They've now got... Mm. Yeah, and I did check their ages. Chidori is a year older than his wife.
Oh, dear.
At least a year older, possibly 2 years older.
Mm.
And at least a year older than Nene as well.
Mm.
Possibly 2 years older. All the past.
Yeah, pretty much.
So there's like a... Yoshimoto has bought Chidori some new swords.
Oh, yeah, he mentions
a name, which I think is like a line, a very long lineage of sword makers.
Yeah.
We see the ninja summoning whistle that Chidori's given Nobunaga.
Yeah, what are those things called?
I don't know, party favours is one word for it.
He's kind of annoyed at the not coolness of it, I guess.
Yeah. Kicho has designed a new ninja costume for Chidori.
A sexy ninja costume.
Yes, with advice from Saru.
Yeah, she's a bit like, I'm a bit exposed. Yeah. Like,
I'm a ninja.
You know, I wear like chainmail under here, right?
Yeah.
This midsection revealing thing isn't really that great.
It is basically a cheerleader costume.
Basically, yeah.
Yes. and then they go after, they find Hanbi, and what's his face gets very excited. Hideyoshi gets so excited he starts shouting, which makes Hanbi's ears explode
with blood. Yes, because every part of him is sick.
Yep. Imagawa, yes, because they're like, oh, Nobunaga's the only one who's planning on uniting all the areas of Japan. We see Imagawa in the sky from his cloud. Now he's dead, saying, I was planning on doing that. And then the narrator says, we have no way of knowing.
That's very apocryphal. We're not going to count that as historical.
No. He died so early on in the situation that we have no way
game.
Of knowing.
In the game, yeah. He was taken out too early. Totally determined.
This was a good episode. I liked having lots of gags again.
Because I felt the other ones were trying to cram like a lot of history in.
They were, yes. I'm sure we'll be back to cramming a lot of history in, surely. Because I think we've probably got two more lords to deal with, basing on the opening credits.
Mm.
Right. On to Shonen Ashibe. Go, go, Goma-chan. Everyone goes to a hot spring. A title which doubles as a synopsis.
Yeah, pretty much. What is it? His grandpa is hanging out at the hot spring he built into his company.
Yes.
And then decides he should go to a real hot spring if he wants the authentic experience of being yelled at for being an old man.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what he wants. Yep. So he takes the entire company and his family and their pet seal. And the episode involves this employee of the company, Sayatome.
Has he been given a name?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
It's here in the synopsis on Crunchyroll. Great. Sayatome-kun wants to get closer to Pepepe-chan, but he's too shy.
Yeah, he imagines several scenarios of how it could go down in his head, but it's like, dude, just like ask her, is the standard thing I keep thinking when I watch stuff like this.
But no, him, Ashibe, and Goma-chan are going to put on a show for the company talent competition.
And it just involves them kind of moving their heads around. And,
yes.
Yeah.
It's that particular type of dance, isn't it, where you all stand in front of each other?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it's got a name, but I have seen it in other places. And it goes wrong because Ashibe goes missing, doesn't he, or something? Oh no, Galma-chan goes missing.
I think some of the girls who were really who think Galma-chan is really, like super cute wanted to take him so they could take selfies with him.
Yes,
and he's key to the freaking comedy routine.
Somehow everyone ends up in the food by the end of it.
Yeah,
and but now he eventually does get close to Pepe-chan, and they go for a walk at the end.
Aw.
This was fine.
Yep, not particularly the best, but still good stuff.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep. And our final short, I was wrong, it wasn't one of his sisters in the preview. It was his dad.
Well, everyone has a dad in this show, so...
They do, yes. I like the fact that the dad looks like the bossier sister. Yes, this is Bono Bono, episode 30, Let's Walk the Path. So, yes, they go... Chipmunk's dad wants to go for a walk with him. Chipmunk doesn't want to go for a walk.
He hates going for walks with his dad, so he invites Bono along.
Yes. His dad is like the older sister.
Well, he's not quite as like highbrow as her, but basically as much so kind of given out.
Yes. Yeah. And kind of wants... He's also kind of like wants Chipmunk to behave in a certain way like the older sister does, rather than just beating him up like the younger sister does.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, he likes to go for walks. They walk along this path that Boar's made.
Because it's a new path.
Yes.
It's interesting, I guess.
And Boar sticks a stone and a pole at the end of the path and then hides in the bushes. And he goes, like, everybody tries walking up the pole when they get to the end of the path.
That's the thing. Bono and Chipmunk decide they're going to make their own path. And yes. Anyone can just make a path.
So they make a very short path, and the dad's like, the path's got to go somewhere. And so Chipmunk lies down beside the end of the path. And it's going to my left arm.
It's like, that doesn't make any sense. Who'd want to do that? And points at Bono. And he demonstrates that, yes, that is totally a thing that is fine by them. But they decide to extend it to the river, I think.
Yes.
Mm. And then they realize that just makes people walk into the river.
It wouldn't, but they test it out and Bono walks straight into the river. So they put a slight curve on it.
So you have to stop and appreciate the view, I guess? I haven't really thought it through.
And so, yeah, everyone starts walking down this, but no one's coming back. And they're like, what's going on? Did they all walk in the river? It turns out Chipmunk's dad has stuck a
tree trunk.
Tree trunk, that's what I was saying. Yeah. Over the river, so there's now a bridge at the end of this path they've made. Well done, Chipmunk's dad.
Yeah, at least he didn't rub it in his face. I'll give him that much at the end.
No,
just the rest of the episode he spends like berating Chipmunk.
Yeah, just seemed to be hiding in the woods, appreciating the work that he'd done. And there were some other animals I don't think we'd seen before. There was like another fennec.
Yeah, and obviously, there. I don't think we'd seen Boar before, had we?
I don't think so, no.
Yeah.
I did like him. I did like the fact that he was just so amused at his own... It wasn't even a joke. It was just...
I want to see if I can make people do something odd.
Yeah, it was a perfectly fine episode of Bono Bono. It had a beginning and an ending, and it didn't make me scratch my head too much or question the reality.
Yeah, I think the Chipmunk ones are going like, yeah, that's family.
Yeah. I think you're right, yes. Yeah. Mm. Focus on Chipmunk tends to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. I can't give you any Haybot news because I realised I haven't finished watching it.
What happened at the start?
Okay, at the start, and I assume this carries on through the entire episode, is they won fourth prize in a lottery to go to a resort. And they show up thinking they're going to the fancy resort, but it turns out, oh no, you only got fourth prize. You got to go to the shitty resort. And
the fourth best resort.
And the three shitty Vokabots, they did win the gold prize. And so they're staying in the nice resort. And the nice resort is run by a guy who the new Zodiac Vokabot, who's how to describe him? He's part horse, part motorcycle, part rockabilly.
Okay.
Recognizes the people owning the fancy resort as being former rock and roll stars. And they're like, no, 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 we're not rock and roll stars. You're mistaking us for somebody else. Also, get out of our nice hotel, you shit heels. And I assume it carries on from there. I realised the wrestling was on, and I wanted to watch New Japan. Which is a nice segue. Let's take going to Tiger Mask Double, episode 17. There was a title, but it wasn't on Crunchyroll when I was writing the titles down.
Oh, it's something to do with your man's catchphrase.
Don't be a softy, was that it?
Yeah, I think that's it.
So basically, it's all about Makabe, the real-life New Japan wrestler, who has a real-life blog called Don't Be a Softy, where he reviews sweets from around Japan.
As he goes on tour, he tries the local sweets.
So they arrive in this new town, and all the other New Japan wrestlers are hiding from him because they don't want to be dragged out on this sweet-eating tour with him.
Like, I didn't realize sweets were so integral in the world of wrestling. Well, probably just to this guy.
This guy is famous in Japan. He's one of the most famous wrestlers in New Japan because of his love of sweets. So he gets on lots of TV programs because it's like, there's this scary, muscular wrestler guy, but he really loves sweets. his tag team partner, Honma, he admits he didn't get run away fast enough.
Yeah.
They drag Haruna and Tiger Mask with them.
Well, she seems up for it.
Yeah, she is also into the sweets. So he's had loads of recommendations from people on his blog about where to go, which sweets to get. But every time he goes there, somebody's already bought all the sweets he wants.
They just sold out. We only make 50 of them a day. It's like, okay, we'll try this one. They make 100 of them a day. They're sold out. What the hell? Okay, these guys don't have a limit on how many they make a day. You're sold out. Oh, my goodness. There's this over and over.
Yes. And they slowly get more clues. It's like, oh, it was some foreigners.
They were very big and muscly.
Big and muscular. Then they see the secretary from GWM. They're like, it's GWM doing this. And she's like, no, I'm here on personal business. Nothing to do with you.
I did like that. It's just like, wait, it's not all a conspiracy, guys. I'm just buying sweets.
And then it turns out it's the Bullet Club have been running around. They've been reading the blog, stealing all the sweets before Makabe can get them to demotivate him for their match.
Like, if anything, I would have thought that would have made him want to beat them up more. Right? For eating all the sweets in town?
Well, it does, because it turns out if he wins this match, he'll get all the sweets. He'll get samples of all the sweets from town.
Yeah, and that's all the motivation he needs.
And plus, they'll beat the Bullet Club anyway, because the Bullet Club have spent all day eating sweets.
That was the plan B. They plan on taking out one guy of this three-guy wrestling group. It's like, they could just not tag him in. And it's like, all you've been doing all day is eating fucking cake. How did you think this was going to go down? Dear.
That was the episode.
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, we also get to see Miss X get the pudding.
Yes, and she liked that more than anybody else eating any cake in this show.
Yeah, pretty much. She seems the only person who eats for pleasure.
That was it.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
It was fun. It was a sitcom, again.
He voiced by the actual wrestler?
He is, yes. Makabe
okay,
is.
I thought that, because he sounds like it.
He sounds like a human being rather than an anime character.
Rather than an actor, yeah.
Yeah, because that was similar with Hammer Noodles. It was like, oh, you don't sound like anime characters. You sound like people. And this does have a lot of anime voices in it. But there's the problem with, I think, Aka's problem is most people sound like normal people apart from the sister, who sounds like an anime character.
Yeah, but they're trying to make her very cutesy. So.
Yeah, I just don't think that performance quite works with Aka. But thankfully there wasn't so much of her in this week's episode when we get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, though, it looks like Haruna is going to become a wrestler, as predicted.
Yeah, what is it? Tiger...
Spring Tiger, I think.
Spring Tiger, that was it. Yes. Yeah. Also, like, if that's not her belly in the preview, like, apparently she got ripped in between episodes and we just didn't spot it.
Well, we've seen her working out.
But we've seen her failing to work out.
And we've seen her being interested in all these women's wrestlers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was inevitable. But yes, she has apparently got super ripped. Okie dokie. Next up, Time Bokan 24, episode 18. The Nazca lines were blank. Even watching this episode, I'm still not quite sure what's supposed to go in that blank.
I think the Nazca lines were drawn by Daru... what the hell are they called? Darumaka? That's not right. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
What are the bad guys called?
I can't remember. I forgot to put the... What's the group name?
Yeah, the group. I think that's what... was the true history when they eventually got it.
Yeah, because this was this one where the bad guys, in attempting to protect the fake history, caused the true history.
Yeah, another fucking time paradox.
Yes.
The Nazca lines were actually drawn by time travelers. And I was like, that's still pretty sci-fi.
Yes. But there's a guy called Nazca who was drawn... I think the idea of this episode is it's kind of like all theories about the Nazca lines are proven to be right.
Yeah, yeah. Some variation on every single theory. So, it also establishes your man with the kind of... the Afro is a manga artist.
Yes. And apparently he earns so much more money doing that than his real job.
Yeah, but he does that on the sly, like...
Yes.
Like, when the guys are out of the office.
Yes. Tsubuyaki.
Tsubuyaki, yes.
Yes.
And he's doing the friggin'... Oh, what do you call that little... The beret kind of friggin' thing as well?
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his story lines up with Nazca's, who's... He had his old friend who... His friend is gone now, and he's hoping he can see his drawings up in heaven.
Yes. Which I think is a theory about the Nazca lines. It's like, these are drawings for the spirits of the dead to see.
Yeah.
But it turns out, of course, that he's not dead. His partner was an alien.
Yeah, and there is a city on the moon.
Yes.
But which they keep going like, not now, not now. We don't have time to do with this. And they're all drawn by the robot.
Yes. And Nabashin makes a cameo at the start.
Wait, what was that?
The director who has done some storyboards on these episodes.
Oh, is he your man's partner? Or?
No, he's the... When they're watching the TV... When the TV show that Tokyo's watching...
Oh.
He's the expert who's fast asleep. The guy with the afro in the Lupin suit.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
He likes to draw himself into his anime, so...
Mm.
I didn't check whether this was one of his episodes. I have to assume it was, because he was in it.
Sure.
Yeah, this was fine. It didn't progress anything anywhere.
No, not really.
Can't remember much else about it.
No, it was like, my only complaint is I think the animation was again a little down.
It was a little rough. I would say it was more variable than the last way through.
Yeah,
so there were some good shots and there were some bad shots. Because I thought, my first thought was, oh, this has picked up. And then I thought, oh, no, it hasn't. It just picked up in that cut.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's definitely some like filler in kind of stuff here. Yeah.
Yeah, so I suspect if I looked, there'd probably be loads of animation directors. It was like some rush where they had to split it out between loads of people.
Yeah, and I feel like the episode, it kind of feels like drawn out for that as well.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Bit of a pity.
There's a few meta things like, oh, the parrot and the robot say, oh, I guess we're getting left behind again. As if they have nothing to do with it.
Yeah, they just get the stand by the robot. We're going to go find out what this history is at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some other comment about when they get there. Oh, the costume that she's wearing is utterly ridiculous this time, her cosplay.
It's an attempt at a costume of one of the Nazca drawings.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't quite work.
Yeah. And there was some educational stuff about how many more of these they keep on finding in recent years.
Yeah, that's
years.
True. And when Nazca's actually digging it out as well, that is how they're made.
Yeah.
It's like a layer of rocks and dust and stuff. So it's like, it's some of it's technically true, but most of it's bollocks.
Yes. Yeah, it was fine. This is an okay series, I would say, overall.
Yeah, yeah.
And it'll be over soon. And then it'll be My Hero Academia in that slot.
Hmm.
Right. Next up, Classicaloid, episode 17. Mandarins, fried mandarins.
Okay, so I looked this up, and this is not a thing.
I looked it up as well, and I was like, yes, people do fry mandarins, but you don't normally fry them in the skin and on their own.
Yeah, pretty much.
At least as far as I can tell. And I'm almost like, are they doing this just to trick people into eating fried mandarins?
I really hope so, because I was kind of looking at it, I was like, that could be nice. I know you can eat orange peel, like, you know, when you're making like a sorbet or something.
Maybe it's a thing which is just happening in Japan, because it's like, the point is made is that
it's an old wives...
Yeah, and most of the characters haven't heard of it either.
Yeah. It could be very localized to a certain part of Japan, yes. Even.
Mm. So, Kadai has got the flu, and who'd seen the video?
Sosuke'd seen the video, Chopin. and Mozart had found a mandarin tree earlier that day.
Yes.
And ate a load of mandarins under the watchful eye.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, we'll fry those mandarins and you'll feel a lot better.
Mm.
And so they do that. She does feel a bit better. Mozart's been eating the fresh mandarins. Chopin eats a fresh mandarin. But Beethoven, Schubert...
Chopin peels the mandarin and then eats it.
Yes, that's it.
Throws the peel away. But everyone else just eats the whole fried mandarin.
And then it all goes nuts.
So, like, you can see the way they're setting it up and the way they keep framing Hachi, like, watching them with his angry eyes. I know his eyes are always angry, but the way they are in this is like, okay, this is a horror movie now, isn't it?
Yes. So Beethoven and Schubert's faces turn orange and they grow, like...
Stems
out of the tops of their heads. Hachi explains to Chopin, because apparently Chopin can speak bird.
This hasn't come up before, but it has now, yeah.
That it's a cursed... There's a curse on the mandarins.
And Hachi was the guardian of the mandarins?
Yes, because they ate the mandarins without permission from the tree.
Yeah, and this is the tree's revenge. So Mozart draws faces on them while they're asleep, because initially there's sutras on their face.
Yes, and then they draw sort of non-infringing kiss makeup on their face.
Yeah, pretty much.
Then they step away. He steps away and comes back, and their heads have turned into giant mandarins with the makeup still on.
And so he's insisting on peeling him. The lads are like, freaking Mozart, stop interfering with it. You're only making everything worse.
And then their heads fall off.
Yeah. Their heads roll off. Their mandarin heads roll off. And they grow like a sunflower.
Yeah, I assume that's like the flowers which grow on mandarin
trees. Yeah, it kind of looks like a sunflower is the way I would describe it. Yeah. Because of the long stem.
And it blooms, and inside the flower is the face, their faces.
Yeah, which they can only say like one word.
They basically can say what their motivation is. So I think
pretty much.
Beethoven just say destiny, and
it's destiny or some word similar,
something like that. And Schubert says senpai, and when they meet Liszt, and Liszt's that head's turned into a mandarin as well with her makeup on, and then her head falls off and blooms, which just says love.
Mm.
And they're chasing Sosuke and Mozart and Chopin around. Chopin and Sosuke are terrified. Mozart finds it hilarious.
Yeah, Mozart's just being a dick the entire fucking time.
Then they're both a dick to Sosuke and leave him behind to get beaten up.
I did like the way freaking Chopin grabs the pad, but not Sosuke. And the pad even thanks him. It's like, oh, you realize the use of me, but the complete uselessness of Sosuke. Oh, dear.
And then they get beaten up. He tries to set fire to them.
They have a plan for like luring them away, and he has Beethoven's flamethrower.
There's an explosion because he doesn't know how to use the flamethrower correctly. And then come the morning, all their heads have come back, and it turns out that the classicaloids have a bad reaction to fried mandarin skins.
It makes their heads do all the things we just described, but then grow back like fresh, like brand new skin, and they feel great.
And then Mozart shows up, and we all turn around, and his head's a pineapple.
Which promptly falls off.
Yes. End of episode.
Yeah. I did like the cut to Hachi minding a grove of pineapples we've never seen before. What the fuck is up with this episode?
I don't know, but it was great.
I didn't think anything could be madder than the fish episode, but I was completely wrong.
Because I was like, oh, the get out is this is like, can I feed the dream? Because she's got the flu. She's imagining all... No, it's all happened.
And the other get out is like Mozart. It establishes that he was trying to remember the Turkish March.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, oh, is this all his music? Because he does his music and then stops and is like, whew, that was great. Couldn't remember what that song was called.
and
still have the problem of fucking zombie mandarin head people. Yeah.
This was great.
Mm.
This was, top-notch bonkers.
See, the show, when it does weird so good, because like I'm not exactly sure what I'm trying to expect here.
Yeah, so it was written by the guy who did, I think he does a bunch of Kamen Rider Wizard was his one of, I think that was the thing he did, the head writer all the way through on Tokusatsu, but he does a lot of stage plays for Tokusatsu and manga stuff. So I guess that's probably the stage element is why he's on Classicaloid more than anything else.
Right, right.
He's done some other episodes as well. But yeah, I was like, oh boy, this is very different to Kamen Rider Wizard, which...
Well, they don't have this kind of effects, I guess. They can't.
No, it's true, yes.
Someone's head rolling off as an orange would be terrifying in real life.
It was. It was fairly terrifying in this.
Yeah.
And there was a thriller sequence with the
Oh, that's
music.
Right. This is one of the few mixes of music that I liked, because it had like a mix with Thriller going through in the Turkish March.
Yeah.
I was like, that actually works pretty good.
Oh, good. Yeah, if you're Classicaloid, I think. I don't know how they're going to land it. I was like, watching this, I was like, episode 6, they were kind of promising to explain what the Classicaloids were.
No. Oh. That's what was annoying me about it initially, but then once I kind of let it go, I was like, it's just going to fuck around. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm fine with that.
And it looks like we got some more Bark next week with him out of his wig, so presumably talking like a human being.
Well, it'd be a very difficult episode if he's just making musical notation.
Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, episode 4, which did have a title, but again, Crunchyroll hadn't stuck it on the description.
I think it's... I've forgotten. The little dragon is Kana. Kana goes to school.
Oh, it's got one now. It's Kana goes to school, open brackets, not that she needs to.
Right, that's it. Yeah.
So, as the title suggests, this is all about Kana going to school.
Again, like, everyone is a better parent than Goku. They're just like, oh, wait, she's like a little kid. She should probably go to school. Yeah.
Yeah. Which they do, and the school is apparently perfectly fine, except for this child who doesn't belong to either of the people who are sending her to school.
Well, she's using Kobayashi's name.
Ah, yes, true, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's the way they're getting away with it, although the fact that it's a woman who has a maid and they have a daughter together, I'm not exactly sure what's going on here. Whatever, we're a very accepting school.
Yes, they are. Well, they make the point of that. Yeah, that's the point of school uniforms, is to make sure everyone's the same in school.
Yeah, and most of the episode is, well, not most, but a lot of the episode is them going around just buying school supplies and stuff.
Yes. And then
manages to do a pretty good job of being cute for, like, if you've ever had to do that for, like, a brother or sister or niece or whatever. Yeah. It's very boring.
Or you remember being a child and demanding cute stationery.
Oh, dear.
And they introduce another character whose name I forgot.
Oh, the kid with the super shiny head.
Yes.
I can't think of her name, yeah. I should write it down.
I probably have written it down, but I probably haven't figured out which character it was. Because I've got a list of characters who are going to appear, and I haven't written descriptions against them yet.
So, yeah, she's initially mad at Kana for being super cute.
Yes.
Or something. I don't quite understand.
I like the way she's played as, like, oh, she's the queen of the classroom, but everybody in the class does not take her seriously. So it's
yeah,
not like...
she's an attention-seeking child, but nobody cares because they're sick of her shit.
Yeah, so Kana pretends to cry, and then she instantly backs off, and they become best friends.
Yeah.
And then they get into this dodgeball game with the big kids.
Or taking over the playground. They're not really taking over the playground. They just happen to be there playing dodgeball. Yes. But, yeah, and the dragons happen to be hanging out at Kobayashi's apartment.
Yes, so they get enlisted.
Yeah.
And they're just told, don't kill those children. Yeah, because it seems like Fafnir's just constantly showing up now to play video games.
Yeah, he's just still crap at Dark Souls, so...
Yeah. And then the dragons have a battle against each other, because this bit is introduced with a preview of what's happened later on.
The carnage!
Yes.
Yeah, like black and white, just smoke clearing in the battlefield. So you figure they've killed all those children, but no, those kids were fine. Well, I mean, they got the shit kicked out of them.
Yes.
But it wasn't as bad as the dragon dodgeball, which ensued afterwards.
But then Quetzalcoatl just uses her magic to restore everything to normal and wipe everyone's memories.
And as Kobayashi says, that's actually really useful. Oh, dear.
Yeah, this was good fun. It had a lot of action in it again because of...
It's one of those shows, like, why is this as well animated as it is?
Well, because it's Kyoto Animation. It's like,
yeah, okay.
Even though I don't like many of the shows they've done in the past, you still kind of have to admit they're well animated.
Mm.
And this indeed was.
Still enjoying it, or...?
I am, yeah. I'm still on board.
Mm.
Rico is the character.
The little kid, okay.
With a very shiny forehead.
I thought they were going to make a point of that, but they just keep showing how shiny her forehead is. I'm not sure why that's the recurring theme of her.
There you go. Final thing tonight. Akka, 13 Territory, Inspection Department, Episode 4, Smouldering Embers in an Isolated Nation.
It's kind of like a small version of the main plot.
Yes.
I suppose like an isolated version of the main plot, maybe.
Definitely not. That doesn't have no relationship to any situation in the country I live in.
Yeah, pretty much.
Purely coincidental. Definitely.
For an anime about like a fake country made out of many countries that are in the shape of a bird. This is like way too real. Yeah.
So this is all about, is it sweets? I think that's how it's pronounced, the country.
Oh,
it's like Sutsu is how it's spelled. But
I thought it was supposed to be spelled like Sue, the river, the canal, or. But yeah, you could be right.
They kind of pronounce it sweets, don't they?
Mm.
And which is the home district of Pastis. From the five secretaries, but now I know that this is based on England. I think his name should be called Pasties.
Just call him that from now on.
So this is like
where the royalty are from, and because of that, the guys who are in power who tend to be royalty and or of royal blood. They're trying to keep it traditional. It hasn't changed for like 100 years. They're like, holy shit, you have a mobile phone, that is fucking cool. And they're all dressed in like super old fashioned things, and it's all Gregorian buildings and that kind of thing.
What time was the Revolutionary War in America?
Was that 1700s or
1700s? So it's around that time, in England, because the Akka people are all dressed as redcoats in this particular era.
There's a
coup d'etat, but it's not the coup d'etat we're talking about. It's basically the commoners are trying to overthrow specifically the guy who used to be a commoner, who's been elected, who's going to change everything around, but instead is living hasn't returned
in the entire time he's served in
just
office,
living a high life outside, supposedly representing the common man.
Yeah. And they, like, I think their two demands are they want that motherfucker to resign, not even, like, burn him or anything.
Up freedom of movement.
Because it's highly restricted movement in between, so they can keep this area pure and traditional and all that jazz.
Yes. So look forward to this happening in the UK in, I'd say, probably 10 to 15 years.
I would have said 4, but all right.
Yeah, probably even quicker. Yes, could be 4, but there was... I think Ken Clark pointing out that people were very into the Iraq War to begin with, and within a year they were kind of not so keen on it. There's a good chance that people who said, "Oh yeah, let's leave the EU," will suddenly be not so keen on it before it's even happened.
Yeah, when you suddenly realise that it's very difficult to go on holiday to France now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's going to change.
This was particularly because this was written probably 2014, I guess these chapters were.
Right, yeah.
It was weirdly prescient. I did like how, obviously, Pastis could see right through the guy who'd been elected.
He doesn't care, though, because he's not, as long as he's not changing his home district, that's fine by him. That's all he wants. He's doing is, like, you know, wasting his time in the job. Yeah. But, you know, that still suits him.
Lillian's older brother, we get to see him.
That's right, yeah.
We learn that people from the royal family are, well, Xuan's people are spying on Lotta,
They're not doing a very good job of it.
They're very easily distracted by sweets.
Yeah.
I do
that appears to be a thing in this world.
Yes, but I do like the spy is just like this little chubby kid. It's like...
Yeah.
So Nino is on the phone to whoever it was that was on the phone before, which may be the guy who Lotta's working for, because we learn that they're working for... We kind of also learn what those... catalogs are and where the cigarettes come from as well.
Yes, that's right. But the head office guys are still think the cigarettes are like a kind of signal.
Yes,
to potential rebels and that kind of thing.
But possibly that's just what Nino's wanting them to believe.
Possibly,
because Nino is also we see him in disguise briefly,
barely,
as he rescues Gene from getting beaten up.
By
bopping a couple of guys on the heads with sticks.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the thing of where he's like, I'm barely disguising my voice kind of thing. Yeah, it's possible that Gene even picked up on it.
Yes.
It's hard to tell with his fucking expressionless face.
Yes. But that's kind of how he works. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to give anything away. I'm just going to let everybody else around me give away their things to me.
I did like the way he was basically like caught on this conspiracy. Like, he was basically standing on the bridge taking... pictures with his iPhone, and a bunch of guys were like, looked up at him and was like, oh, he's heard us, come on, we gotta go get him. And it's like, hey, you heard all about our plans for the revolution. He's like, no, I didn't. I only know that now because you told me.
Someone asked me to take those photos. Then we cut to Lotta going, oh, my brother, I asked him to take some photos. Why hasn't he sent them to me?
Yeah, so she's gotten him in a lot of shit and he gets kidnapped by the La Revolution.
So she's sending, at the start, she's sending a parcel to the guy who owns the building.
Yes, and says she doesn't know, she's never met the guy.
Yes, and Nino volunteers to take the part, to post the parcel, and then whoever he's on the phone with says, I've got your parcel, or I'll bring
you. Is it possible he's, like, not only is he talking to either the king or someone fucking high up like that, or because we were suggesting before that Nino and his sister might be related. That would make sense, like.
Yes. Yeah, So Lotta and Gene might be related to the royal family, and so maybe Nino's working for Kavaram as well.
Yeah, well, I figured either the royal family or, someone high up like that.
But then also Groschler takes a phone call from somebody. So who's Groschler working with? And Lillian, of course, at the meeting goes, Geonosis isn't part of the coup d'etat. And you don't have to believe me, but that's what I think. I'm going to back him.
It's like this friggin' secret that everyone knows.
Yeah, but I did like the fact that he wasn't trying to hide the fact that he's allied himself with Gene. And it's like, I'll put my cards on the table. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess by doing that, he gets to see how people react to it.
Yes.
Because maybe it doesn't affect his plans one way or the other, whether they fucking know. Even though he's told Gene, okay, you're secretly working for me. And it's like, no, you're not secretly. I'm fucking told everyone.
And so the guy, we also, the guy from the branch leader in the Swedes district was working with the coup d'etat, and Gene kind of managed, he was expected to take over from Gene if Gene left, but
Gene was like, oh, it's even rough to work here for that amount of time because, you're cut off from everyone.
But yes, it turns out he's in a relationship with a woman there, and he's part of this coup, and they know the coup will eventually happen because he notes that, the Akka soldiers didn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, they were ordered to fire on anyone approaching the government building, or I forgot what building they were trying to take in the coup. But they only fired in the air, and then it was all like hand-to-hand stuff. So obviously it's something that the people want, as far as all the fucking police wanted as well, to some extent.
And Gene's story about the cigarettes and the catalogs is that businessmen who live in the building that him and his sister manage give him catalogs to take to people when he goes to these different parts of the country to do business, and in return they give him cigarettes.
Yeah, he takes cigarettes as payment.
Yes, that's his story anyway.
Yeah, and it seems maybe that's true, except for the fact that when you consider how fucking rare cigarettes are in this place.
And there's another line with the guy from Acker at In Sweets who says, I want to talk to him about another coup d'etat.
Yeah, yeah.
And whether that's just in terms of him covering up this coup d'etat is in terms also a coup d'etat, or whether it means something else. I don't know. I'm sure it will all become clear eventually.
Because the setup at the end result at this is Gene's conditions for not talking about this. Because there's been many coups in this place. Is like, okay, let everyone go. And your man's like, yeah, fine. Because he knows that this is just how it's going to be here. And letting them go without charge makes no difference. To the point where your man even keeps his job in Acker in the same district.
Yes. Well, Gene also said, oh, I'll have to give you a very low rating, so you'll be stuck here a few more years.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like a wink. There you go, buddy.
I guess I'm still stuck in my job.
Yeah, and again, I still don't know where his allegiances lie.
No.
Ah, dear.
But I was paying more attention to the lyrics of the theme song, and the theme song is kind of about how you kind of have to... I think it even kind of says things about, like, how you got to throw out your ideas when you more
information. Oh, the guy doing
along.
The kind of rap bit. Yeah, I have been noticing that as well. Because it's one of those intros that does give away a lot of the...
Yes.
Not the clues, but a lot of the things it's going to be talking about.
Yes, it's not quite a story rap, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's more so like the mentality that people are having, I suppose.
Yeah. It's not like Bulworth, which gives away who... One of the mysteries in Bulworth is like who shot him, and it's given away in the song, which was a chart hit. I love that stuff. I like the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Partners in Crime theme song, which gives the entire plot of the film.
You should at least save the ending, but all right.
No, story raps are the best for movie soundtracks.
Yeah, no, I'm still loving this show.
Yeah, this is head and shoulders above everything else we're watching.
It might be my favorite thing every week. You know, there's other things like I sit down and watch and I have a good laugh watching, but I do like, sit up and pay attention with this one.
Yeah, it gives you stuff to think about.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's just, it's kind of very refreshing in how it handles its mysteries.
Hmm. See, the central mystery mightn't actually be as much of a mystery as we are getting on, but it's given us enough fucking rope to hang ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How do we get this nice fictional tour around this country?
Which, yeah, fictional, but still too close to reality.
Yeah. But that's fine. I'm sure that's intended.
Yeah.
Right. That ends this week's episode of Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime. Be back next week to hang with the Let's Go gang. And if you can't get enough of us, check out our other podcasts at secretofthesailormadness.com and dynamitingthebrain.com. Goodbye.
Bye.